And good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Tuesday, June 30th, 2015. 57 degrees with overcast skies. And I am here in the studio with two wonderful women. The first is on my left is Ellen Frankenstein. She's a documentary filmmaker whose latest work, Tracing Roots, A Weaver's Story, is a portrait of Dolores Churchill, who is on my right. And Dolores is an eminent Haida weaver who has been teaching her master craft skill, the thing she's been kind of developing all over Southeast and sharing, and that Ellen made the subject of her film. It's really exciting to have you both here in Raven Radio Studio this morning.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah. And so the film, Tracing Roots, A Weaver's Story, what is it about? What's the boilerplate description of what the film is about?
Now, I'm going to turn it to Dolores, who didn't know how this was going to be a long process and how the film would turn out. Dolores, how would you describe the film, having seen it now many times and many screenings?
I think the thing that's most interesting to me is every time I see it, I come up with another question and wonder, why we didn't include certain things and why we left some things out. But each time you see it, I get a new vision of what it is.
And Sitkins will have the opportunity to see this film. So you're doing a screening. We'll provide details again about this at the end. But there is a screening taking place tomorrow at noon at the Pioneers Home. And the film, what's so interesting is it follows you, Dolores, a master weaver and an elder, on a journey to understand the origins of a spruce root hat that was found where?
In a glacier, the Tuscanini Glacier up in near Haines Junction.
Right. And where was the hat exactly? Was it next to?
When these hunters found that hat and the archaeologists were flying in, actually, the blades from the helicopter stirred up the area, and the first thing they saw was the hat. And I was so excited when I saw that hat because I really wanted to go and study it immediately. It was a really instant connection because I'm a weaver, and so I really had to get there. And so I wrote letters to see Alaska because they didn't really want anyone to really do any studies. And so I went to wrote to see Alaska, and they offered to pay my way. And then I had to get a letter of support from the village of Klukwan because they really were interested too, because they felt they had a connection to him, to the man that was found in the glacier.
So what's the name of this man, the traditional man? I know it's translated as the long ago person found.
Kwe Dan Chi, is that how you say it?
Kwe Dan Chi, yeah.
He was a 300-year-old traveler discovered right in this retreating glacier. And the movie is really your quest to determine what this hat is, why he was wearing it, what happened perhaps to him, but really about his identity. And when you first saw the hat, I hope I'm not spoiling the film, though. But the film is a quest, really, or it's both a mystery about the hat and a portrait of Dolores.
Yes.
So, Ellen, which came first, the mystery or the portrait?
Oh, the portrait. But I've been making films for a while, and if I'm going to bother to do it, because I make very slow films, not Instagram, not fast, not like one interview, quickly edit on your iPhone. No, I take years. I want them to be layered. So the film's about Dolores, but it's about these other questions, and we don't answer them. I'm working on a series of films that don't end in a way, and that's okay. It's nuanced questions, and so anyway, that's kind of the film's about intellectual property. It brings up DNA, brings up a little bit of climate change, right?
Yeah. And Dolores, when you, what is your relationship with the hat now? Now that you're on the other side of this film, and there's been all these screenings.
Well, when I first started out, I had no idea that my DNA would connect me with the man they found in the glacier. In fact, the only reason I had my DNA done was because I thought I had a connection to a man they found in a cave on Prince of Wales Island that's closer to my home. And so I really doubted I was related. In fact, when I talked to Dr. Brian Kemp, I said, I think there's a mistake. And he said, there's no mistake with DNA. So then I was really shocked. I went back to my hotel. I had not thought about the man at all. I had only been thinking. My concentration was on the hat. And all of a sudden, I'm wondering, how did he die? Did he fall into the crevasse and lay there and freeze to death? So anyway, I called my sister and I told her our connection, and I was telling her that poor man, he must have froze. And she said, oh, Dolores, be realistic. He fell into the crevasse, hit his head, and he never woke up again. So anyway, there's lots of questions of, you know, how he ended up there. But he had a dead moose near him, too. So he had killed a moose. And he had all these tools that had to do with caribou hunting. And amazingly, the caribou must have come clear down into that area, or close to the area, because he had a lot of caribou tools.
So it is an ongoing mystery for you, this life of this man. And the journey of how you figure out your connection to him is really worth watching.
But I don't want people to think the film is only about Quedanche, the Longo Man. It's really also about Dolores as a teacher and someone who kind of ignites other people to care and have passion for what they're doing, right?
Yeah. Dolores, I just want to highlight, not to embarrass you, but to highlight some of your many accomplishments, among them an honorary doctorate of humane letters by the University of Alaska Southeast, a National Endowment for the Arts Creative Artist Residency, an award by the Alaska State Council on the Arts travel grant, and several others, a fellowship to study Haida basketry in London and Canada. So you've really taken this, would you call it a skill, a practice that you've learned all over the world? Was that what you thought you would do when you were growing up as a little girl, to become a weaver, one of the few people who really knows how to do this and how to teach it to others?
I really didn't, because I took a basketry class when I was very young. And my mother kept saying, take it undone, because it, I don't remember if it was convex or concave. But anyway, there was a prize offered of $5 at the museum in Victoria for children's art. And so when they were sending the baskets, my mother said, don't include hers because it's not good enough. But the homeroom teacher said, it has to go. All of them are going. And you won't believe it. When it came back, I had won. It was $5. In the 1930s, $5 was like $100 now. So anyway, the $5. And when the prize came, my mother called me up and put the blue ribbon on me. And then she called my friend, and Sylvia Kelly, and she said, and she gave her the $5. I was so angry, I took the blue ribbon and I stomped on it and I said, I hate basketry anyway.
What is the future of basket weaving in Southeast when you think about the modern era? Yeah.
Well, I feel really that Haida basketry, because my mother worked so hard on Haida basketry, going back to the village and teaching there and teaching all over Southeast. And she really did it when people were really angry. They didn't want any of that intellectual property shared. So she really was put up with the controversy that was happening over that. But she felt so strongly that she wanted the basketry to continue.
Hmm. Yeah. And you're a teacher as well. You are wrapping up beginning Northwest Coast basketry at the University of Alaska Southeast. What do you see in your new students? What are the reasons that they want to learn this?
Well, I think that they're wanting, I think after doing basketry, they feel a real kinship to their ancestry and want to continue an art that goes back thousands of years. I think that there's a real connection and feel connection to their ancestry. I think that's what even this film has done for me, is that it's had, I never thought of it as a continuing thing, but when I look back, my grandmother on my mother learned from my grandmother on my dad's side, so it comes from both sides, and my grandmother, great grandmother, was a great weaver too, so it's just really a continuing thing. And I think my students have that same feeling, yeah, because they speak about their grandmother's baskets being in museums. And so I think that's what it gives them, a feeling of continuity of the art.
Ellen, you've been working with Dolores on this film for how many years?
We started probably about 4 years ago. I mean, it's over time, so it wasn't like every day we were together, but yeah.
I'm wondering, it's a very intimate journey, as you said, you both went through to uncover more about Dolores, more about this hat, more about these issues. How has your relationship changed? Have you had a relationship like this with someone in your films before?
Yes and no. I mean, I've never made a film about one person. It's more usually about a topic, but, you know, I get very close to the people I work with. Yeah, no, but Dolores is special. She's amazing. She's a giver. She's a sharer, you know? She sees the world with she's a super social justice reflex, I would say, too. We've traveled a lot. We've gone, this trip, we traveled, you know, we've been from Haida Gwaii to Whitehorse, and then our screenings are taking us from all over the place. And yeah, so we've traveled together, and it's been wonderful. And I've gotten to know her family.
Wow.
Very well, and that's also a funny thing. When you do sort of a biography-like project, it's kind of almost scary because you're like, well, how is the family going to react to this?
Right.
Well, how do I have the right to tell this story? But it became a really good collaboration, partly because there's some issues in the making of the film, and the problems actually brought us together.
What were some of those problems, just quickly to list?
Well, no, people have to see the film. There's just the film brings up some things about what you can and cannot see, and who has control, and what might maybe what we shouldn't look at and put in museums. It brings up some issues and that we need to all think about, especially as non-Indigenous people who sometimes have a history of collecting things. But I want to say that with working with Simon Fraser University in Canada, we're working on a study guide, and the film's going to eventually end up on PBS. We're organizing the underwriting, and we welcome community screenings and school screenings. We've done a lot of running around, but I really like to use films to carry on to the next thing, and I think that's what Dolores does in her work, and so I hope the film will kind of carry that spirit.
And there is a screening happening very soon. So for those of you listening who would like to see this wonderful film, it's being screened tomorrow at noon at the Pioneers Home. Both Dolores and Ellen will be there to talk and answer any of your questions. And you may bring lunch. For more information, you can call Julia Rosenheim, 917-655-6542. Yes, Ellen.
Well, I just also want to thank everyone who's helped make this film possible in Sitka. I mean, it's a lot of people involved, but the UAS, the Sheldon Jackson, the Charitable Trust, and people, if I don't remember, thank you. I just came in from San Francisco. But I really appreciate everyone who's helped make this possible. There are always journeys, these projects.
And thank you so much for coming in this morning. Ellen Frankenstein and Dolores Churchill, it's such a pleasure to talk to you this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.